Aussies love the bush, but sometimes the bloody bush doesn't love us back. I'm John Harper, just a simple joker talking about why mental health is everybody's business and what to do if you think a mate is struggling.
It was actually 2 years ago tomorrow, Andy, he had a seizure in the shower, and just the way he fell, suffocated himself and he passed away. I think I sort of went into a game face sort of mode really, where I sort of put on a face, but it was just about managing the club and, sort of the best outcome for everyone in the club. People were really shocked, and I think the first thing we sort of did was just plan to have that time together with everyone, just so they could sort of sit in it together, I suppose.
Sometimes to deal with problems, we have to think outside of the square.
Yeah.
The increase in alcohol was due to emotional distress.
Yeah.
But he used physical activity and the game to try and suppress excessive alcohol.
Yeah, definitely.
And the boys could wear that rather than him saying, look, this ain't doing you any good, cut out the grog. That might not have worked.
If I go to do fencing or if I go to open gates and things like that and I find myself irritated, I know that there's something wrong. Just doing something active just to get it out of my head, just to sort of set me free from it, I suppose. If someone sent me a text message saying, hey mate, like, you're a bit of a dickhead today, like, wouldn't take offence to that. I think they're your mates.
I would.
This podcast is a Room 3 production and brought to you by our mates at the Department of Primary Industries and their Rural Resilience Team and the Murrumbidgee Primary Health Network. In this podcast, you'll be hearing the lived experiences of everyday folk in rural and remote Australia. The language can be strong at times, and the references of suicide may upset some people. So consider who's within earshot when listening. Any advice in this podcast is of a general nature and is not an excuse for you not seeing your own GP or medical professional. We've got plenty of links on the Mate Helping Mate website of trusted service providers across the country. Head to matehelpingmate.org.au.
Welcome, podcasters, to the Mate Helping Mate podcast. John Harper, Stock and Bingle here. Today I'm going to introduce you to young whippersnapper Ben Brook. Ben's an ag teacher, and through adversity of losing a good mate in the football club, I want to talk to Ben about what makes a good mate and how to be a good mate, and how did he identify the struggles and the strategies that he used, not just for himself, but with other people. So, Ben, welcome to the podcast, and I hope you're in the mood for sharing your story, and more importantly, how are you going, mate?
Thank you very much. It's lovely to be here. As you said, had a couple of challenges in the past couple of years with the sudden passing of a good mate, Andy, who we played rugby with. But, you know, we sort of had a number of different strategies that we employed to sort of manage that, and that was sort of happened rather organically. I don't think many of those were actually planned, but...
So in that period, everything was going well. You were enjoying life, and then life whacks you.
Yeah, had a bit of a twist. It was actually 2 years ago tomorrow. Andy, he had a seizure in the shower, and just the way he fell, suffocated himself, and he passed away. And so as you can imagine, it was just a massive whack for everyone in the club, all the sort of families around and the community around. It affected us in quite a big way. I think for a lot of those people, myself included, that was the first, you know, person that I'd ever really lost that wasn't like an old family member. So I think it was quite an unusual exposure to grief for a lot of those young people. It was pretty full on. It was pretty full on for a lot of us.
But he was a mate.
Yeah, a big mate. Just a really loud, positive voice. It's funny, I always used to dread, especially when the winter came, like going to rugby training, because it'd be cold and I'd sort of sit in the car with the heater on before I went out there, and as soon as you get out there, he was one of those voices that you'd be playing touch footy and just carrying on with the shit talk, and no matter what sort of day you'd had, there was those people like that, people like Andy, who would sort of get you keen for training, get you keen to be together, and yeah, just such an influential sort of person, just to the atmosphere of that environment, I suppose.
So he was simply a person who made you feel good.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And that was his aim goal. That was his purpose, was making people feel good about themselves, increasing people's optimism and attitude before a game, and just always there for other people. I was the president of the rugby club, and I think personally, when I sort of got the news that Andy had passed away, I think I sort of went into a game face sort of mode, really, where I sort of put on a face, but it was just about managing the club and, sort of the best outcome for everyone in the club. People were really shocked, and I think the first thing we sort of did was just plan to have that time together with everyone, just so they could sort of sit in it together, I suppose.
What, even on the evening, you just got together and what, had a training run?
Yeah, that's right. Like that was, it would have been a Tuesday or a Thursday. That was our training night. So we sort of got all together. Like it was sort of open to the whole community. So there would have been maybe 150, maybe 200 people there. And we sort of just gathered in a big circle. And look, not many words were said, but I think it was just a time for everyone just to sit in that moment. And obviously a lot of tears were shed. And then after we finished that, we went to the Duck and we had a bit of a barbecue dinner and had a few beers and things like that. And so one of the big things that we addressed was like a good way to support everyone was just enabling people to be together. Like reflecting back on it now, that's been one of the beneficial ways that we all managed it and we all managed sort of each other's sort of emotional well-being.
And people like me and probably the more professional sort of people really push the talk angle, but talking is only a percentage of communication. So that big circle you had at training, 200 people, as you said, there wasn't much talk, but there was a lot of show, wasn't there? There was a lot of visible emotion outpouring.
Yeah.
And stuff. And to a certain extent, I think that's quite empowering. I mean, you can see other people are affected as deeply as you are and, yeah, you don't have to say stuff.
Yeah, and it also gives you, I think, comfort to cry and things like that. I think that was a big thing for a lot of people was just being able to express that emotion. And I think we're quite lucky there's a lot of players in the club that are sort of comfortable with that, and I think that really enables other people to share that. I think I knew that I was pretty capable of sort of managing this myself, but I just wanted to make sure as a club, everyone else sort of had access to that support, whether that be through their own mates, whether it was each other. We got in contact with CSU and they provided us with a number of different counsellors and stuff that the boys could access and the whole community could access. So I think it was just trying to provide those, just that support in any way, really, just for everyone.
Did you access any of the formal support?
I called you, John. You were the first person I called, actually, when I found out. I think I called you because I sort of wanted a bit of advice on how to manage it.
So how did you know? I didn't know you from a bar of soap.
No, that's right. I think I just remember hearing about things you'd done and I just thought that would be a good place to start, I suppose.
So one of the other things that occurred at that time as well was that you ended up getting together out at Andy's parents' place.
Yeah. So Penny, Andy's mother, she was massive on keeping everyone together sort of as much as possible. And so we went out to her place a couple of times for sort of barbecues and things like that. I mean, the boys were playing golf together.
So united we stand, divided we fall. But by Penny involving us in her grieving process, I think gave you an awareness of what was important. I'm not sure whether you're aware of it at the time or whether it slowly grew on you.
No, look, I don't think I was. Quite a few of the boys did, you know, maybe hook into the alcohol like a little bit excessively sort of thing. And Will, who was Andy's older brother, he identified that as quite a detrimental thing. It was sort of becoming just a little bit too much. And we were midway through a rugby season and really on a strong track at sort of competing at grand finals. And so he brought us all in and we sort of addressed what had been going on and that we need to get back on track. And so that was his decision that he made and we were all definitely sort of in agreement of that.
So in sometimes to deal with problems, we have to think outside of the square.
Yeah.
The increase in alcohol was due to emotional distress, but he used physical activity and the game to try and suppress excessive alcohol.
Yeah, definitely.
And the boys could wear that rather than him saying, look, this ain't doing you any good, cut out the grog. That might not have worked.
Yeah. Yeah, he used to say, you know, have a couple of beers after the game and stuff once we finished and throughout the week, just after the beers. And we all made that deal and that was it. There was no questions about it.
One of the things we push through the podcast is this sense of the ABC of good mental well-being. So that's an awareness. And being young is not any different to being my age, is most of us don't have an awareness of how loss and grieving can affect our emotion and our lives. The idea that you continued playing football probably gave you balance, because while you're playing football, you can't be thinking all the negative stuff that went with grieving for Andy. And then the beauty, I suppose, of all of it that I can see from it was the maintenance of all the connections of the relationships. They actually came tighter, and they're actually, most of them are quite good friends with Andy's family and stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
What is a mate to you? How would you define a mate?
I think a good mate is someone who's comfortable being there with you no matter what. Doesn't offer advice, but I think just offers that opportunity to listen and sort of help me reflect on things. I think that's what I think a good mate is. Whether that's a phone call, whether that's someone just being there with a handshake, with a laugh. Yeah, I think that's what a mate is, yeah.
Do you put much value on a mate?
Yeah, big time. Phone calls are a massive one for me. I've got a small group of really good mates around me that I touch base with very often, and I really appreciate their support, and I'm sure they appreciate mine.
So it's not a one-way street?
No, definitely, yeah, mutual sort of two-way street. Yeah, I think that's really important as well. I think having that two-way street where you're happy to listen, and then you're also happy to, or they're happy to listen as well. My best mate who I live with, we sort of have, probably once a fortnight, I'll send him a message, and we have a pack of diaries that we'll literally only have one each, maybe once a fortnight, and we keep that in the first aid kit. We'll just go and have a cigarette each and have a beer each and just sort of debrief anything that's sort of happened or anything that's been hectic, but we both cherish that time, yeah, which is really nice.
So that's a ritual, a recharging ritual,
yeah,
if you will.
It's often a highlight, actually, just being able to come home and we'll have a couple of dogs and we'll just sit down outside and just play with the dogs and have a beer and just talk a few things over, and yeah.
And is that value of mateship stronger post-Andy?
Yeah, I think that's definitely another layer of, you know, like another bit of thickness you can add to a friendship is when you do struggle together. You know, people have their own struggles, but I think if there's people struggling together, I think that adds a lot of force and a lot of power to a friendship and to mateship.
And it builds your own, I hate this word, resilience.
Yeah.
And I think people are getting it wrong, is that I think a lot of people don't realise that with resilience, you've got to go down to come up. Most people seem to get it mixed up with being resolute, that you just stand there and you take whatever's dished up and you don't give one inch. And that's not right, is it? It hurts sometimes.
Yeah, definitely.
This podcast has been made possible thanks to our mates at the Department of Primary Industries and their Rural Resilience team. The Rural Resilience Program builds stronger primary industries by co-designing new products and services that support and enhance the growth of farming businesses. The Rural Resilience team listens to the needs of primary producers, learns about services and programs that could assist, and links farmers with the most appropriate services and information. This podcast is also brought to you by the Murrumbidgee Primary Health Network, also known as the MPHN for short. The MPHN Empowering Our Communities Grant is the federal government's way of walking the talk, demonstrating their commitment to supporting families and communities living with the impacts of drought, with a focus on mental health and well-being. It's a whole-of-community approach to mental health and suicide prevention, encouraging and empowering local and rural communities to look for proactive approaches to mental health support and suicide prevention.
I think in relation to, I don't know, my own dealing with grief and issues like that, I think I've developed a pretty good process where I can identify behaviours of mine that indicate there's something wrong. For example, I really enjoy going fencing. And I find that as soon as if I go to do fencing, or if I go to open gates and things like that, and I find myself irritated, I know that there's something wrong, and I can sort of pick that up quite well. And my partner can pick that up as well. She sort of knows if I'm driving a bit funny. And I think I've sort of developed a process where I can then think back in my mind about what actually is irritating me, and then sort of pinpoint that and then deal with that. I think that's something that I've sort of learnt, and yeah, that's how I manage a lot of issues.
Is it as straightforward as what you just said, or is there some times where even though you know why you're down and you're cranky that you don't open up and say talk with your partner you just wallow in the shit?
Yeah, it's definitely not that easy. I think once I know what it is, then you have the challenge of actually dealing with that thing. Yeah, I think that's an important thing, is identifying what's actually giving you the shit and then in time dealing with that.
And do you find that you acknowledge it yourself, or is it sometimes your partner or your mates or workmates, they actually might bring it to a head?
Yeah, my partner, she's pretty good. She'll sort of pick things up pretty well. But I think I can do it majority of the time. I'll be able to identify what's going on and then just sort of picking a way to deal with that.
So, Ben, you go through the process, and sometimes it can take time, in acknowledging that you've got something that is peeing you off big time. Can you actually identify what kicks you into action? I mean, I thought about it a bit, and I'm not sure that I can. Sometimes it'll be cause my missus goes on nagging and nagging and about me being so grumpy that I finally think, well, bloody hell, I'll do this just to shut her up. And that's what I believe is the real reason that I do it.
Mm.
But I'm sure it isn't. Do you find that? Can you put anything on it?
Yeah, look, I think I know what I enjoy. I know what tasks and what things I like. What I like doing, like I like going fencing, I like spending, you know, I run a little farm that I go to each weekend, just as a bit of a hobby, and I know that I enjoy those things. And so as soon as there's anything that I know that I enjoy, as soon as I can identify that I'm sort of losing patience with it, or it is more of a chore, as soon as it looks like a chore, I sort of know that that's not normal, and I know that that's not how I normally would be. Often that'll take me a really long time to come to that conclusion that you know, that this one particular thing, you know, I'm stressed at work. That's the thing that's causing my entire lifestyle to sort of be irritated and impatient with people. That might be the one particular thing. And so it sort of takes me a little bit of time to address what that is. But then often once I've found that particular thing, I then try and find a way to deal with it. And sometimes that will be talking to someone about it, talking to just a mate about it, talking to my partner about it. Often that'll just be, you know, exercising, going to the gym or doing something active just to get it out of my head, just to sort of set me free from it, I suppose.
But what's the value of physically building a fence, of putting stuff together, of working on your small farm? How does that pick you up?
I think it's the idea of maybe accomplishing a challenge. I think fencing can be a pretty ugly thing, but one thing I like is, I know it's a bit funny, but I like finishing a fence, and I like, you know, there to be a few cuts on my hand and I've been sweating and I've been working hard, but I've accomplished it. And I think that's often a recharge for me.
So the cuts, the bruises, the aches and pains, whether it's from fencing, whether it's playing football, is kind of you realising that the good things in life don't just happen. Nothing comes for free. I mean, that rolls off everybody's tongue easy.
Yeah.
You get nothing for nothing.
Yeah, definitely. And I love the feeling of waking up the next morning and being stiff and sore, like, because I know that I've worked myself really hard and I've accomplished something, and I've sort of done myself proud. I think the Sunday after I play rugby, I find quite rewarding, I think, just because I know that I've pushed myself and I've accomplished something that I wanted to achieve.
And I suppose subconsciously you also know you've got the wherewithal to overcome that soreness, those cuts and bruises, to face another challenge.
Yeah, definitely. It's a bit of a recharge.
Yeah, interesting. I don't think I've actually really zeroed in on that before, but that was there. No, that's good. I like that idea that's what we do. Sometimes we punish ourselves to build something, but it makes us stronger and makes us actually appreciate what we've got.
I think I'll often find I'll be relaxed and I'll be at ease with that problem, and I'll be more open to tell someone about it. I'll feel comfortable to tell someone, and I'm comfortable to deal with that problem with someone else's assistance.
I've probably got an add-on to that as well, is that doing these positive things in themselves don't directly solve the problem. And I mean, it just puts us in a better place to deal with it. And it's like the loss of Andy. The reality is we're never going to solve that problem.
Mm.
We're never going to forget. That's just the way it is. But by undertaking positive activities, it means that we can move forward and that we don't wallow and get dragged down with a negativity. Because even while you and his family will always suffer the loss, there was also a lot of good brought about by Andy and his life with yous. And I suppose that's the beauty of doing positive things. That's the beauty of playing football at times. Mm. And you stand there, you know, as somebody's kicking the goal and you're saying, shit, I wish Andy was here. I can remember that game. Yeah. He was bloody good kicking the ass of them Waratah blokes. Yeah. And I suppose that's the challenge for all of us. It's not about forgetting. I don't think that, you know, to a certain extent is honourable or whatever else. I think it's inherent on us to remember people, but not the misery part of it. It's about the good stuff. I mean, ultimately, that's what life's about, enjoying the good stuff, even though we know 80% of our life might be drudgery and shit.
Mm.
That's the reality of life. We got to get cuts and bruises and whatever else, but for heaven's sakes, let's look at what we achieved when we got them. So, you know, we got cut deep with the loss of Andy, but don't dwell on the cut. Let's look at what we achieved. Ben, we were talking about mateship, and we all know that it's very easy and we don't really have to think very hard about enjoying the good times. We just go along. What methods do you use if you've got a mate that is struggling or has got a problem that he doesn't seem to acknowledge but is standing out like dog's watsits to you? Yeah. What are some of the strategies you use?
I think being able to identify when someone is acting a little bit differently, doing something a little bit funny is normally...
define funny. What would they be doing that you think would be funny?
Just getting on the piss a little bit too much. It often is a bit of a... It takes a bit of a leader in a friendship group to really have the courage to pull someone up on something like that when they can recognise when something's going on. And maybe someone doesn't want to admit that something's going on, but it's clear that everyone can see that they're not doing that well.
How do you get them to acknowledge them? So a fella like me, a jagger like me, you know me a little bit and you know that I try and be funny. My wife says I've got no humour at all, but I'll use humour sometimes or crack some sort of joke. And I'm sure that when I walk away, the person is thinking, was he joking or was he serious? And that's making them think. So that's one of the avenues I use. Do you use things like that?
I think I've sort of developed a pretty good sort of bullshit detector and I can sort of tell when someone's not telling me something.
Do you call them out? Do you say that's bullshit?
And look, sometimes I will, but I think sometimes it'll simply just be a text message afterwards just saying, you know, hey, mate, I know there's something sort of going on. Just let me know whenever you want to give me a call or something like that. It's just... identifying that there is something there. And I think often, especially between blokes, you know, if they're with a couple of people, they might not be comfortable to share something that is going on.
And is it easy to send that text or do you, I'm going to send it, I'm not going to send it, I'm going to send it, I'm not going to send it? Is there a bit of fluff in there at times? You're not quite sure?
I just send it. I think with text, you know, it's such an easy way because... You know, you can just flick it away and if they want to answer it, they can answer it. If they don't, they can leave it. It's not like a conversation face to face.
What do you do if they don't answer it?
If they don't answer it, then I'll leave it and then I'll send a text the next day saying, what's going on? Like, you know.
Do you mention it to another of their friends or something and you say, look, I'm worried or not? Or you just deal one-on-one basically?
I think I just deal one-on-one unless it's something that I think a friend would assist with or something like that.
Do you find it hard? Because I often hear from people and they... say, oh, I'm not sure whether I should or I shouldn't. Why do you think you're so, boom, down the line?
Well, there's no harm in doing it, really. Like, if someone sent me a text message saying, hey, mate, like, you're a bit of a dickhead today, like, I thought you seemed a bit off. I mean, that doesn't bother me. Like, I wouldn't take offence to that. I think they're your mates.
I would.
Which aren't. They're your mates, though, you know?
Like, I know. No, I probably wouldn't. You're probably right. Oh, dear.
I think that, you know... You spend time with people and they understand who you are when you're happy and who you are when you're not doing so well. So I think they've got a pretty good bullshit detector on them.
God, I'm sure we could talk forever. But Ben, I really appreciate you making the effort to have a bit of a chat with us. I know it's hard communicating with an old bloke like me who doesn't understand LOLs. And look, I really appreciate you coming along. And I think we have identified a few differences. I think our basic strategies of helping each other is the same from your generation to mine. I think that your generation is way better in talking about and demonstrating the fallacy in boys don't cry and the masculinity of men.
Yeah.
So thanks, Ben, for the time.
No, thank you very much. Been a pleasure. If there's anything that's popped up today that has been confronting or it's rung home for you, I really do encourage you to go and seek professional support where possible. That can be simply just calling a mate or speaking to your GP or a psychologist that you may know of. One support network that I have used personally is Lifeline, and they're available 24/7, and their number is 13 11 14.
In finishing, a reminder that this podcast features general information only, and we recommend that you get independent advice from a qualified professional. Mate Helping Mate has plenty of links on our website with a number of great service providers across the country. Head to matehelpingmate.org.au. This podcast was a Room 3 production and brought to you by our mates at the Department of Primary Industries, their Rural Resilience Program, and the Murrumbidgee Primary Health Network. You can find out more about these organisations and the great work they do on our website. Other episodes of this podcast can be found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts by searching for Mate Helping Mate and hitting subscribe. If you like what you've heard, make sure you leave a rating to make it easier for others to find us. Better yet, share it with your friends and family to start a conversation about mental health in the bush. This podcast was produced by Aaron Johnson and AJ Clifford for Room 3, a production company that works with not-for-profits and social enterprise across Australia. A massive thanks to John Harper, who over the years has travelled this country tirelessly working to improve mental health in rural and remote Australia. And of course, his off-sider Michelle, for her continued support for John and his work, and her hospitality for our crew and guests at the farm during recording. Recorded and edited by AJ Clifford, original music by Southwark Sounds, and stock by Soundstripe. Thank you for listening, hoping you can move forward, and we hope that this makes a difference.